welcome once again to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University, it's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practices with the people who juggle that task every day, including our host here, Matthew Cummings. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. How's it feel to be a juggler? Well, sometimes you're a magician. Sometimes you're a juggler. I don't know. You're all sorts of crafty things here.
I actually can juggle. That's the funny thing. Wife hears this episode, she'll say, did you tell Paul that you can juggle? You're supposed to not tell anybody that.
Well, today you're going to reveal lots of other things. Who'd you bring with you to share some other secrets?
Absolutely. Yes, it's great to be back with another episode here of Marketing Communications Today from West Virginia University. Before I introduce our host, though, I want to talk about what we're going to be talking about today and discussing, and that is brand positioning, specifically the teachings of Trout and Reese, and are they still relevant today? So our guest on this topic today is Susan Jones. She's an award-winning professor, author, and consultant with expertise in direct and digital marketing. Susan teaches direct marketing, digital marketing, advertising, social media, content marketing, and B2B classes at Ferris State. Her practice focuses on corporate training and seminars in direct and digital marketing, as well as marketing planning, product development, and copywriting. Susan is also on our team here at WVU. So she teaches IMC 616, direct and digital marketing, online in the Reed College of Media at WVU. And Susan joins us today from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thanks for being here, Susan.
Hey, my pleasure. It's a very nippy time in Grand Rapids.
Yes, I am also in a very cold area, so I can certainly relate.
Polar vortex as well, huh?
'Tis the season. So many have read these books, obviously, right? So I wanted to level set here first. Can you tell us more about the philosophy of Trout and Reese as it was first presented a few decades ago now?
Yes. Their books came out in the 1980s, and each of the books was updated for the 20th anniversary, which was in the 2000s. The first book was called Positioning the Battle for Your Mind, and what Trout and Reese talked about makes a whole lot of sense. When we think about any product category, it could be something as simple as soft drinks or fast foods. As a consumer, we're asked to name how many we can think of in that category. It's usually no more than seven names.
Right.
And in our minds, we put them in a little ladder. Usually people will say Coca-Cola for soft drinks first, even if that's not their favorite, because it's number one, McDonald's for fast food, and then it goes down from there. But kind of the cool thing is that rung number one typically has 40% of the market share. So that would be like a McDonald's or a Coke. And then rungs two and three go down from there. After rungs two and three, lucky if you get 5% market share. If you look at the fast food industry, those lower rungs, they're not burgers. They're something else. They would be chicken. They would be tacos. And then the other book, Marketing Warfare, they talked about the fact that depending on where you are on those rungs, you want to have a different strategy. So if you're number one, you're on the defense. You're sort of like a National Football League defensive player.
Everybody's gunning for you, right?
Yeah, they're gunning for you, but you're so big, you can fend them off. So that would be like McDonald's and Coke. And in the presentation I do on this, I have a picture of Coca-Cola and McDonald's. They're partners, so you get Coca-Cola products when you go to McDonald's. And then, of course, number two, and this is not necessarily number two in all fast food, but the number two versus McDonald's would be Burger King, and they team up with Pepsi, which is the other number two. So they're offensive. They're trying to knock off number one. And a great example of where that actually happened was when Visa went up against American Express. Instead of just staying in the same realm with MasterCard, and they used the fact that they're accepted everywhere as their differentiating factor, and they actually knocked off American Express and became number one. After defense and offense, Trout and Reese talk about the flanking position and that would be maybe 7-Up in the soft drink realm. They're famously the un-cola. They're not trying to survive in the cola land. So that's a little bit of what this concept is all about.
Excellent. So we have the battle for your mind, and we have this marketing warfare, and you painted really a very vivid picture for us as to what's going out in the landscape. And, you know, these came out in the 80s, as you mentioned. And what were some of the first signs, though, that the Trout and Reese concepts might be coming a little outdated?
When I first saw some years ago, actually it was 2000, Al Reese said that he thought that Amazon was wrong to expand beyond books and CDs. According to his philosophy and also his partner, Mr. Trout, Amazon should stick to their knitting, and they were known for books and CDs. So they said Volvo stands for safety, Dell's a personal computer, even Microsoft is software. Now Amazon's going to stand for books and charcoal grills? This makes no sense to me. Well, clearly they were as wrong as they could be about that. And I think Jeff Bezos was actually very smart to say, wow, I'm number one in books. The day that I started selling CDs, which nobody really buys anymore, but at the time it was big, I became number one in CDs. So why shouldn't I be selling everything to this huge number of customers that I have? And then Reese's daughter actually wrote a column when Zappos was purchased by Amazon, and she said that she thought that was dumb. But that has turned out to be a great success because Zappos has been able to keep its own branding, and the two of them share distribution channels, which has been hugely successful for both of them. So those are a couple things. I think Mr. Trout was a little more quiet on this, but the Reese's really kind of stepped in it, I think.
And that's why Jeff Bezos is worth, you know, $111 billion as well, right?
Yes, you got that right.
So let's move to another category here, and this is often cited as a case study in some of the courses that we have here in the IMC program, and that's Dollar Shave Club. Now, how did Dollar Shave Club disrupt the way men's razors were sold for generations?
Well, they were so smart to take on Gillette, and according to Trout and Reese, that would be suicidal for something, a small upstart like that, to take on number one. But what Dollar Shave Club did was use digital channels, inexpensive digital channels, and they created these funny commercials that became viral. And so they got all kinds of free publicity for Dollar Shave Club. And they focused on one of the funny quotes is in one of the commercials, the head of Dollar Shave Club says, Roger Federer is a spokesperson for Gillette. And he jokes that he gets 19 of every $20 you spend with Gillette, whereas with Dollar Shave Club, you can get a razor for a dollar.
Right.
He was very, very clever with that.
So how are big brands then reacting to these disruptors in maybe defensive ways? What are a couple of examples of how these big brands are fighting back against David, if you will?
Amusingly, Gillette actually, after poo-pooing Dollar Shave Club, they started their own shave club, and so you could get Gillette razors through the mail. So they, this again, is very un-Trout and Reese-like, because number one is never supposed to dignify. They're, you remember I said they are the defenders. They're never supposed to dignify anybody below them, and yet they kind of took on Dollar Shave Club in that way, and that was pretty shocking. Another one, a few years ago on the Super Bowl, there was a commercial that became very controversial from Budweiser, considered number one in American beers, and they had this lashing out at microbreweries that, oh, that's fake and that's kind of wimpy and you need to drink Budweiser. Meanwhile, their parent company, which people soon realized, if they didn't know it already, was buying up all kinds of microbreweries. So that was,
of course,
not a swift move on the part of Budweiser, because they should stick with, in my opinion, if they're number one and if they're going by Trout and Reese, they would have stuck with the beautiful Clydesdales and the heartwarming ads. But no, they took on these little upstart microbreweries and dignified them, which is very un-Trout and Reese.
So that's how those big brands are fighting back. And we talked about Dollar Shave Club. Besides that, can you give us some other examples, a couple other disruptors that are making waves these days or that you anticipate will be making waves here in the not-so-distant future?
The one that is really on the tip of my tongue is what we call the fintech industry.
Okay.
And these large companies like Google and Facebook, I'm sure you've seen, they're trying to make inroads into the way we pay our bills. Google has announced that they want to try to have checking accounts. Amazon, of course, would love to have your credit card business. And so banks are looking at this and saying, this is supposed to be our bailiwick, and now these companies that have millions of customers are going to be trying to use the concept of ease and convenience. And certainly every time I buy something on Amazon, they're saying, hey, you know, if you bought this with, started a credit card with us, we're going to give you a discount right now. We're going
right.
to give you cash back. I think this is a big example of disruption in the financial services business. And I happen to be on the board of a bank in Michigan, mm-hmm. and I noticed on the agenda of the Michigan Bankers Conference that's coming up in early December, there's a whole section on fintech and the impact of fintech and what we're going to do about it.
Wow.
So, in fact, this morning I was at a bank board meeting, and this topic came up, and the president of the bank, the CEO of the bank, said, we are going to stay vigilant about that. It's sort of like if you can't beat them, join them. And we're going to be looking at how we might be able to partner with some fintechs because obviously they have this huge audience of people that are pretty loyal to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the other side of that, just think how much these companies know about us, the Googles, the Amazons of the world. I would suspect that at Facebook, too, that some people are going to be wary about this. Well, they know enough about me. I really don't want them to know how much I'm paid and where that money comes from and what I'm spending on my utility bills or whatever it might be. I think there is a question about that. So that's the first one that's really on the tip of my tongue. But
mm-hmm.
another one that's quite obvious is Uber and Lyft disrupting the traditional taxi and limo businesses. And it's become so big at certain airports, they've had to create a special place for these independent driving services to pick people up. Another thing that I think is important is I've gone to cities late at night, and there are no taxis there, but you can still call Uber and Lyft, and they will come. So it's a pleasant disruptor. It's also, in my experience, I use Uber as opposed to Lyft. It's cheaper than taxis. And the other thing is, you know, the taxi business gets a little complacent. I've had taxi drivers in New York City that were on their phone the entire time I was in their cab. I mm-hmm. had one a year or so ago that said the tip wasn't big enough, and he was just standing there with his hand out, you know. So with the Uber, you know how much you're going to pay before you even get into the vehicle. And
right.
tipping is optional. The Uber model has really made things easier for a lot of consumers. And I'm
Absolutely.
A baby boomer. I'm not a kid. But all my friends are using Uber, too. And, in fact, some of them were using it before I was. So it's not just for younger people. But then when we think about disruption, what's going to happen now to all the Uber drivers in the foreseeable future, we're going to have driverless cars. So
mm-hmm.
the disruptor is going to be disrupted again, which is kind of fascinating.
Wow.
Just another example of that, Airbnb and the other home sharing services are really disrupting the hotel business where people are buying properties just to list on Airbnb. I knew somebody when I was teaching abroad that was staying in a beautiful apartment, and I said, how'd you get this great apartment? And they said, well, we knew this person from Airbnb, and when she gets a good tenant like us for a month, she moves out and goes lives with her daughter. She gets all this money. A lot of people can be a hotel these days. And then just, I don't want to get too far into this, but disrupting the grocery business, the Blue Aprons and other companies that are giving you exactly what you need to cook dinner for people that they get sick of doing takeout, they want something fresher. So that's another disruptor. I mean, we got a million of them, right, Matthew?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we often talk in PR and journalism that anyone can be a journalist. And a point that you just made there that really stuck with me is, you know, now anyone can be a journalist, anyone can be a driver, anyone can be a hotel or hotelier. It's really interesting times that we're in. I don't want to disrupt your flow here, but we do need to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk more about digital disruption and some of the industries that are ripe for disruption in the future with Susan Jones. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
All right. Well, there is a place for disruption. It's called West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program. It's the first of its kind in the country, and it's something you can find out very easily about today if you simply go visit them at dmc.wvu.edu. If you do that, you're going to find that they focus on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University is a place that you can go and prepare for your career by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those we're featuring today here. So if you want to learn more, it's just those nine letters, DMC for Data Marketing Communications, dmc.wvu.edu. All right, that's all the disruption I can do for today here. I don't want to disrupt this flow at all here.
Sounds good.
I just want to do a shout out to her school there, Ferris State. I grew up in suburban Detroit. Lots of kids I know went to Ferris State. Her fun school. Great. They always thought to go to. A little frozen for me. Yeah. I don't know if I want to go that far over there, but
it is quite frozen up there. But we're doing so well in sports. Our basketball team is undefeated so far this year. And our football team is number two in the country for Division II football.
Wow, there you go.
And they had a 10-0 regular season. So that's a little bit off topic, but we're very proud of our Bulldogs at Ferris State.
Why, anybody would want to live on that lake effect, though, that comes off of the Lake Michigan and travels across the state all the way to Ann Arbor. I went to University of Michigan. Oh, my God, it would go all the way across the state, and you get tons and tons of snow. But fun in the summertime, frozen in the wintertime here.
Yeah, exactly. You just get used to it.
I guess so.
But, you know, while we're talking about education, talk about disruption in education, and our very program that you and I teach in is a disruptor because people are so excited by the opportunity to study online. And at my school at Ferris State, we're even going to have two virtual reality classes in the College of Business next semester, which should be absolutely fascinating. Everybody gets their own avatar and they go to class in a virtual world. Very cool.
And, you know, beyond the convenience of that, though, it's bringing those diverse perspectives from all around the country to the table.
Yeah,
it really brings about some really rich discussions from people that are doing things at major brands all around the country, all around the world, for that matter. So let's talk digital disruption. And so do digital disruptors tend to stay with niche promotional methods like social media and video, or do they expand more into more traditional mass media as they grow?
Another example of that, I would say, is the Bombas socks, which started out small, and maybe you've heard they're in radio now quite a bit.
They're doing a lot of radio,
And they're, one of their ads is, one partner said, "Why would you get a tattoo that you didn't really want?" And the other partner says, "I promised I would get a tattoo when we sold a million pairs of socks and gave away a million." And I think they're up to 20 million pairs of socks now. So they are.
Does he have 20 tattoos?
I think he just promised to do the one. Yeah, but yeah, that's his partner should have made him do that. At least have hash marks, right?
Yeah.
If you look at Dollar Shave Club, they started out with kind of a, what would you say, kind of a guerrilla marketing.
Yeah, pretty content focused at first, especially with that opening video that they did.
Right, trying to go viral and get the word of mouth going. But later on, they started to actually do TV ads where they show some poor soul trying to buy razor blades at a store where they had to find somebody to open the case, and it was just a pain in the neck as opposed to going out to your mailbox and there's your blades. Yes, they do. As they get more money, they tend to go more mass, and then that helps them grow even faster. Yes.
Right. And then they become the giants over time.
Right. And that's another thing. It's a little bit off topic, but the younger generation just loves to say that they're doing good. Like they buy Bombas or they buy Tom's shoes. Many different product categories where you buy something and then you give something just by doing that. And it's kind of an easy way to feel good that you're helping somebody without having to spend a whole lot of time on it.
Right.
And that's another thing we're seeing a lot of.
That's their key differentiator in many ways. So we've talked a lot about some brands, but Susan, what other fields seem to be ripe for disruption right now?
So I think it's already happening in retailing, where we're seeing so many the old line stores either going bankrupt or cutting back. And that's because, I don't know about you, Matthew, but I usually will say, oh, I need something. I'm going to look on Amazon. And now Amazon can get it to me overnight usually, or mm-hmm. 2 days at the most. So can't remember the last time I went to a mall. So this is a huge disruption. And what we're seeing for retailers is they are going to have to create experiences to make people say, well, I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to go out, even if it's January, and I'm going to go to that store. So special events and in-store things like I went to Ralph Lauren in New York earlier this year, and they have a beautiful tea room now in the store, which will get people into the store just to enjoy that. Lots of things that, well, like Nike Town has always been that way, where you could really experience something when you went there. I think we're going to see more of that, and I would consider that a reaction to the fact that retailers can't just say, here we are, you come to us. It's
right.
not going to work anymore. And then another one, of course, that's happening with Apple TV and Disney streaming opening up just recently, we're seeing more and more disruption of the TV and movie businesses. I still like to go to the movies and see something on a big screen, but I think that some people are just saying, well, I'll just wait till it can be streaming. We have a beautiful new movie theater that opened up here in downtown Grand Rapids, which was quite a statement for the future of movies. And the first time I went, there weren't too many people there. I'm hoping that it will make it because mm-hmm. the movie business is kind of iffy right now. People have great big TVs at home. Do they need to go out to the theater? And then we're also seeing the big networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, are losing viewers just one thing after another to streaming and to DVRing things or just not watching at all. So those are some other disruptions that we're really kind of in the middle of that. And I'm really going to be interested to see what kind of disruptions are on the horizon. It just takes a clever person to say, we could do this a different way, couldn't we?
That's true. We could all be disruptors. We just need that big idea.
Yep,
we have
exactly.
time for just one more question, Susan, and okay. I want to bring this back to the consumer. Disruption, in your opinion, does it benefit the consumers? I mean, we've really talked about brands that have grown from nothing into multi-million-dollar or even billion-dollar brands when you talk Zappos and others. Is it a benefit to consumers, or is this disruption more of a negative for them?
Well, I think overall it is a benefit because mm-hmm. it's largely about convenience, the convenience of having things delivered to your home, the convenience of having something come to you from a company like Blue Apron where you don't have to go out to the grocery store and buy things you're not going to use, the convenience of being able to call an Uber in a place where there are not a whole lot of cabs, whatever it might be. It's convenience, and also sometimes it's a lower price, which I think consumers love. And then from the retail standpoint, retailers have to take another look at themselves and not be so just, well, here's the product, you come and get it, but give people a real reason to come in. I think consumers will love that.
So there's definitely reasons that these brands were able to come in and disrupt these categories. So
yeah,
it's all based on consumers' needs and wants.
Right.
Well, Susan, great insights here today. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for spending your afternoon here on WVU Marketing Communications today. And thank you as well for listening to our program here from West Virginia University. I hope you found today's episode as informative as I have. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you. We'll